Welcome back to this week's episode of Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Wintraum. How are you doing, Seth?
I'm well, Fred.
Yeah, and you're coming back from a quick test ride of the Surround.
Yeah,
and you were just as impressed as I was.
Yes, this thing is really fun. I don't know if the Trump tariff is going to ruin this thing, and maybe everybody should just go out and buy one right now at their, what, $3,500? But, yeah. Man, you go 0 to 40 pretty much as quick as the front wheels stay down. And it's like easy to ride, it's smooth, it's quiet. Pfft, a lot of fun. Jeez.
Yeah, it's a great little machine, very well made. And yeah, you're right. So when I did my review, I didn't even mention the Trump tariffs that it technically could increase the bike by 25%, if I understand that correctly. That'd be a big deal.
Yeah, big deal.
But yeah, I mean, availability is already low. I think they can only order it like by the container or so. So they get a container, and it sells out pretty quickly. But yeah, very fun bike. I see Matt in the YouTube comment section is asking me if I've gotten a delivery date on my Model 3. I haven't, and it's bothering me because there's some kind of production delay. Was it last month or early in the month? They told me that my car should be produced by the end of the week of the 13th, which was last week. It wasn't. Early this week, they told me that they should have an update for me by the end of the week. I haven't had an update yet, so I have to assume that my car hasn't been produced yet. Of course, there's a few things that make it. It looks like they focus the early Model 3 performance production with the white interior. Mine, I order it with black interior, so that might be something that is delaying the delivery or the production and everything. Also, obsidian black. My exterior color was obsidian black, and it looks like they didn't do an obsidian black Model 3 until earlier this month. So that might be a combination of things that they're not doing a batch of my car just yet.
Has anybody else in Canada got a performance one?
Not a performance one, but I've gotten reports from people not getting delivery dates just yet, but being told that their car went in production for the all-wheel drive. So I don't think that Canada is the issue. I think it might be my specific configuration that might be the problem, or not. I don't know. I'm asking for more information. I want more information for sure. And Tesla is being they don't talk too much about it.
Right.
But yeah. We have plenty to talk about, though, this week with our coverage this week. Starting by the most popular article this week that we published was about the Tesla Semi and some comments from the diesel truck industry about the Tesla Semi. They have doubts, and I mean, it's not the first time we've heard the doubts from the trucking industry, and specifically Daimler and also some trucking companies that just don't believe Tesla. Now we get a comments from Cummins, is that what you're saying? The big diesel engine manufacturer. And we also got from the diesel consortium, the diesel forum guys, so representative of the whole industry, really. And they don't believe Tesla's Not necessarily the specs, but the price point. So the operation cost of operation per mile of $1.20, they are asking, where is the proof? And I mean, that's a fair point. we don't have any proof of the economics of the Tesla Semi, which is of course the biggest thing. I mean, all the spec that he unveiled, the 500 plus mile range, decreased acceleration, the full load capacity for the first time that an all-electric semi truck would get at the full class 880,000 pound capacity. All those things are great on their own, but they don't mean anything if Tesla cannot deliver at a reasonable cost of operation, which would also includes the amortized cost of the truck itself, and then of course the cost of a kilowatt hour, the efficiency per mile compared to a diesel engine. And Tesla is promising $1.20, which compare normally to about $1.50, so a big 30 cents per mile difference. That's huge for an industry that has so very slight margins like the trucking industry.
Yeah, it can make 20%, all the difference. 20% less.
Yeah, 20% for, like, if I understand correctly, about if you can get 10% gross margin as a trucking company, you're very lucky. So having your main cost, which is your truck and the cost of operation on your truck, reduced by 20%, it's massive. So of course, when you hear something like that and you're in the trucking industry, you're in the truck industry, disbelief is your first go-to. I mean, it has not to be true, otherwise you're ruined, basically. And I think that's what we're seeing right now. The doubt comes from fear, basically. I don't know if you agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of variables. You know, I think a big chunk of the savings is the cost of electricity. And Tesla's guaranteeing, what 7 cents per kilowatt hour, I believe?
That's a weird one, right?
Yeah, so this feels like a little bit of, I don't want to say Tesla math, but I feel like they're optimistic. It's not unheard of to get sub 7 cents, even 5 cents per kilowatt hour. You know, like in Las Vegas, if you're in an industrial plant, because you know electricity is almost free because of the dams right there. But you know, out in the road in the middle of nowhere, where these theoretical charging stations are going to pop up, electricity might not be so cheap. And you know, obviously Tesla's got the solar component. Even if they put out a solar field, they're not going to get 7 cents per kilowatt hour from a built solar field, even at wholesale. So, you know, are they taking a little bit of a loss there, or, you know, are they getting some sort of subsidy? You know, what's going on? I don't know. But you know, this feels to me like a little bit like they're trying to be optimistic. They're giving optimistic figures. The real question will be, there's two probably real questions. Is one, can they get under whatever the trucking industry standard is at 150 per mile? Maybe some routes have cheap electricity and more expensive diesel, and it makes sense. And then other places, maybe where electricity is expensive, it makes less sense. And then the other thing is, like, can these things really go 600 miles on a charge? Can they, you know, can Tesla produce enough of them? Is everything going to work properly? You know, all the operational questions. Are truckers going to want to drive these things versus their counterparts? And, you know, obviously the other companies Daimler even has a electric truck in production. So they should
know. And Cummins too. Cummins has his own too.
Yeah, Cummins, and I saw Kenworth has one. I mean, pretty much everybody has some sort of prototype. So they're not totally oblivious to the electrification. They just
don't see the same economics as Tesla for it. They don't see achieving the better than 150 cost per of operation per mile.
I mean, is that Tesla's advantage in the battery field, where they decided, hey, we're going to build our own batteries. We're going to build a ton of our own batteries, and the economics of scale is going to give us a competitive advantage over everybody else. Is that part of the equation? Is it Tesla's technology? Like, are they more efficient? I mean, we've seen in the Model 3 for a sedan to get, with like normal tires to get energy efficiency near what a Prius type of vehicle is getting. And that's the most efficient electric vehicle, the Ioniq. That's got to be some sort of, you know, voodoo black magic stuff. So if they can apply that same stuff, same technology to the semis, theoretically they can eke out, you know, 10 or 20% efficiency advantage over just the standard. You know, I'm sure Cummins and everybody else are just pulling DC motors off the shelf. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt that battery factor is a big part of it. Battery cost, Tesla has the lead in battery cost, so you can transfer that to Tesla Semi. But I think there's a bunch of other factors too. The aerodynamic performance of the Tesla Semi, from all the comments I've heard from other truck makers, that's another thing that they just don't believe, that Tesla can achieve such a good aerodynamic drag coefficient for a truck that size and with that capacity.
Yeah, so, I mean, look what they're up against. Like, look at in the picture of in the article. Yeah. I mean, it's basically like a square front, you know. And they, I mean, trucks have gotten a little bit more efficient, but I mean, it's baby steps. And you know, Tesla's, if you extrapolate that over like 30 more years, maybe you get to where Tesla is right now.
Yeah, I'm not just talking about, like, I'm aware that the picture looks very different with this one, but I'm even talking about the Nikola One, for example, which is a brand new truck, a lot more aerodynamics. But the comments that I got from Nikola about the Tesla's claim of aerodynamic, they're like, we don't see how Tesla can get to that, and they claim that they have the same shape of the truck, since they're even suing Tesla over the truck. So they copy their design and they somehow get better aerodynamic. We don't know how. Maybe that's because it's not exactly the same design, right? That might be the answer.
Yeah, if I was a Tesla lawyer, I'd probably use that.
Yeah, well they'll have to go to me for that, because I don't think that was a public comment. Maybe it was, but it was a comment that the Nikola CEO gave directly to me at one point. So moving on from Tesla Semi, we're gonna go to Tesla news that's less fun, the Tesla fires. Two different fires that happened this week.
Yeah, you'll have to be more specific.
Yeah. Firstly, we reported on a fire that happened early in the week. That was the 22nd. That was Wednesday. Yeah, Wednesday. Early in the morning in New Jersey, a Model S caught on fire on the highway. And so nothing necessarily newsworthy from that. Cars catch on fires all the time, electric or not. But there was a few things that were interesting with this one that I thought was noteworthy. Firstly, from the report that we got from a witness going by, they saw the car on fire on its own. The driver was outside the vehicle at a safe distance and everything, but he passed by and there wasn't any evidence of an impact, any significant impact. So at first we thought that maybe it was a fire without any accident, which is of course a little bit more worrying. Not that gas powered cars don't catch on fire without accident. They certainly do, but it for a completely different reason than electric cars. So we need to still be aware of that and track the source, the cause of the fire. We've seen the other examples of that. For example, a very weird one was doing a Tesla test drive. So Tesla was giving a test drive to a customer, and the Model S caught on fire on its own, and it was in France. And so that's a very bad first experience for a customer with the Model S. And Tesla ended up tracking the cause to a human tightening a bolt instead of a robot for whatever reason, and the bolt wasn't tightened enough, and that started a chain of event that led to the fire, which is weird. But what happened with this one? So that was what we thought for at first. But then we reached out to Tesla, which Tesla eventually managed to contact the owner. And then the owner said that there was actually an impact. And the impact was from an 18-wheeler that was in front of the Model S that lost a part of its suspension, a large suspension component, apparently, that fell from the truck. And the Model S ran through it. And it, again, I'm quoting, partially lifted off the road. The car was partially lifted off the road from that large suspension component, and then something happened and the fire started. The driver was able to exit, wasn't injured and anything. Now, so that's more reminiscent of what happened back in 2013. If you were following Tesla then, that was the original Tesla fires. I mean, there was a bunch of batches of Tesla fires making it to the media and everything, but the original one was back in 2013 when I think it was three cars in the space of what, like 2 months?
Yeah, even if not even that, maybe like a month.
Not even that, yeah. Maybe even a month. So three different cars that caught on fire following that they run into at high speed into an object on the road. And so that actually showed somewhat of a weakness with Tesla vehicles, that they added a layer of a titanium layer under the battery pack so that an object, if run over, wouldn't directly puncture the battery pack and cause a fire. So it looks like something similar, even though the car should have some reinforcement now under the battery pack, it still started a fire. But Tesla didn't confirm that. They didn't know if it actually punctured the pack, even though it has to, basically, for the car to catch on fire like that. And it wasn't from necessarily a big impact, because like I said, there wasn't any evidence of a large impact in front of the car. So it's a weird accident.
Yeah, so you have to wonder, like, if it punctured the titanium below the car. We had some questions about other EVs. Like, I remember the I-Pace. They said there was no kind of protection underneath the car for the batteries. I wonder if, you know, in the, like, near future, that there'll be some sort of regulation about the thickness of, or the impact resistance of the battery containment on the bottom of a car. I mean, if this lifted the Tesla off the ground, I imagine it was a pretty big impact.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, it doesn't seem like, what if that battery wasn't there? Like, it would have probably just went right through the bottom of the car and killed the guy. You know, I have to imagine that something that lifts the car off the ground, like, you're probably lucky that there was a battery pack there to absorb, or, you know, the titanium protection there to absorb the impact.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Even if the car caught on fire because of the battery pack is there, at the same time, you have to think that the battery pack is an added layer, titanium or not, that could have prevented something even worse. So we don't know for sure that Tesla is going to investigate the accident, but so far that's what we know. There was another Tesla fire, completely different than this one, that happened last evening at Tesla Fremont factory. So reports started to come out early in the evening, and that was directly from the local fire department. And what came out of it is that a bunch of cardboards or skids, like wooden skids and cardboards, at the back of the factory caught on fire for an unknown reason. We don't know for sure what happened. And that fire was pretty big, and it spread out to a tent, sort of a tent next to the fire that also burned down part of the tent. So,
but not the tent, not the Model 3 assembly line tent.
Yeah, because it was a fear at first that it could have been the General Assembly Line 4, which is, of course, infamously under a tent or a tent-like structure, but it wasn't near that at all. It was a couple of different tents. There's a bunch of tents, apparently, at Tesla Fremont. They like tents there.
It's like a circus.
Yeah, those are pretty large tents. They remind me of a circus tent for sure. And, Tesla commented on it, saying no one is injured. Elon said that there was no damage to the factory itself, but I mean, the tent structure in the back is certainly part of the factory, so we don't know. So it's not that significant of a fire, but what's more worrying than anything is that also apparently the power lines caught on fire. So if the power line catch on fire, that could lead to a loss of power or a part of the factory losing power potentially. And we've known of one previous incident very similar of a small fire affecting the power supply at Fremont that shut down the factory for a few hours. So Tesla didn't confirm that there was any impact on production, but they didn't also deny it or anything. So we don't know if there's any impact to production. That would be useful to know, but Tesla didn't want to confirm or deny it.
I'm also curious, like, what caused the fire? Like, I guess it could have been, like, friction of, you know, putting a pallet on the ground and something random like that. But, I fear that Elon would send out a tweet saying, it's foul play. Somebody lit the thing on fire or something.
There was plenty of comments about that being sabotage and whatnot. And I doubt it. It's pretty dry near Fremont. They're basically near the very close to the desert, and cardboard catch on fire pretty easily. So, and if you wanted to sabotage something at Tesla Fremont, doesn't look like it was the best place for it. I mean, it looks bad, but it's not that big of an impact, unless, like I said, there was a problem with the power lines and the power shutdown, but we don't know for sure. Excuse me.
So, do you think this is a good time to talk about we talked about this on Slack a little bit, but like the whole sensationalism of Tesla fires, like, are those newsworthy? Are they like, or are we trying to like bring Tesla down? I know, like, strangely, we got a couple of Twitter users saying that we're trying to sabotage Tesla by reporting on this stuff.
Yeah, we got a strange amount of hate about that this week, that we are Tesla shorts now and everything. And I get where it's coming from, for sure. but I think it's very misplaced. But that said, there's no doubt that we make our money from page views and everything, and there's no doubt that Tesla fires bring page views, so we're not going to try to deny that in any way. But we don't report any Tesla fires, every Tesla fires. We do it when we think there's an aspect that is newsworthy. I mean, I can tell you, I skipped three other Tesla fires that I know about in the past 3 months. So there was other Tesla fires like that we know of, but I was able to gather more information about it very quickly, and I determined that it wasn't any significance at all from it. There was one that I could have reported on that was more interesting, and it's not because it's bad for Tesla. It was the I think it was in Ontario, where a bunch of vehicles were parked in the grass for an event. I don't remember what was the event, including a Tesla vehicle, and one of the gas-powered cars on the grass, when it was started, it started a fire in the grass, and then it burned down a bunch of other vehicles, including the Tesla vehicle that was there. But also, you could tell another Tesla fire, but it was actually started by a gas-powered car fire. So that was an interesting one, but I skipped it too anyway. But so again, what was most interesting about those two flyers, that the fires that we reported on, we explained that the first one about the potential of a punctured battery pack while running on an object. So I think that's very that's relevant to electric cars, and especially Tesla. I think Tesla pioneered that skate-like design with the battery pack on the floor. It's very important to make that as secure as possible, which Tesla has clearly taken step toward that in the past. So it happening again, I think it's a noteworthy, and Tesla should take note too. And if we don't think that there's a need to change anything, but if there's one, they know. And this one, of course, the Tesla fire, I think it's not, it's the production aspect. If or not it can affect production, I think it's extremely relevant. I mean,
yeah. All right, moving on from fires. Maybe we should talk about the ZEV credits and Tesla's deliveries growing 140% in California.
Yeah, in California, in Tesla's home market. I mean, they're killing it in their home market right now. Of course, part of that is because Tesla is concentrating still on Model 3s in California, and California got all the display cars first, all the test drives first. So, and of course, there's also the local incentive there. So there's a lot of reason for Tesla doing well in California, but they're doing so well now that we learned this week, based on the registration data that the California New Car Dealer Association released, that they grew 139% so far this year. Was over 200% for the last quarter alone versus the same period last year. But year to date is almost 140%, which is pretty great. And the biggest thing that you have that we have to recognize from that is that it offers a big advantage for Tesla in the short term to get a boost, a cash injection from the ZEV credit. So if you're not aware what the ZEV credit are, it's CARB, the Air Resource Board in California, that set that up years ago, where automakers get credits for every electric vehicle that they sell in the state, and they need a certain amount of credit to compensate for their sales of gas-powered cars, which, of course, most automakers sell gas-powered cars. And if you get enough of the credit for your electric vehicle sales to compensate for those gas-powered car sales, then you don't have to pay anything. But if you don't, every credit that you're short from that you have to give to the state is a penalty. I think the penalty right now is $5,000, if I'm not mistaken. That could have changed in the past few months, but I think it's still $5,000. And of course, Tesla's big advantage is that they don't sell any gas-powered cars. They only sell electric vehicles. So they get a ton of credit, and they don't need them to compensate for any gas-powered car sales. So they can sell them to other automakers that need them to not pay the $5,000 penalty, so they sell them for less than $5,000, so it makes more sense for them to buy the credit from Tesla or any other automaker with a surplus instead of paying the penalty to CARB. Tesla has used that for the last few years to they accumulate a bunch of credit, and then they sell them at once and get a boost in their financial for a quarter. That helps them a lot. They sell hundreds of millions of dollars worth of those credits in the past few years.
This is something, though, that Tesla doesn't really talk about, because it kind of feels the you know, Tesla can't make money without the government, or Tesla can't turn a profit without ZEV credits or whatever.
Yeah, so it feeds into that narrative for sure. But it's part of it. What I don't like when Tesla talks about it includes them in their gross margin. When they say, like, oh, Model S this quarter had a 25% gross margin with ZEV credit, 23% without ZEV credit. We don't care about that. I mean, it's 23% gross margin. We need to know how much money you can make per car, and that's how sustainable we know Tesla is. But that said, you can include them in their overall operation, operating profits, if they were operating loss in most often. But now they're trying for an operating profit in the next two quarters, the current quarter and the next one, and moving forward. Elon Musk said that he plans that almost every quarter forward, so should be profitable. And ZEV credit are going to play a part in that, at least in the short term. And our point with that, with Tesla's big increase of deliveries in California, is that that's going to come with a huge amount of ZEV credit. It's difficult to exactly say how much of those are worth. So my understanding is that Tesla get at least 3 credit per cars delivered in California. So last quarter, that was just over 14,000 cars, which amount to over 42,000 credits. Now, the value of the credits, that's what's the hardest to determine, because, like I said, the penalties were 5,000, but Tesla has to sell them less than 5,000, otherwise automakers won't buy them. And then the price is also dependent on the actual availability of the credits, how much other automakers need them. So it can change when everything. I've heard anything from $3,000 per credit to $4,000 per credits. So can be anything from there, but it's fair to say that easily worth over $100 million for Tesla just over the last quarter, and that should be even more this quarter. So it's by the end of the year, Tesla could have literally like hundreds of millions of dollars of ZEV credit in the bank that they can try to sell to other automakers. I think that's something that investors should keep in mind.
Yeah, and also when Tesla does turn a profit, theoretically this coming quarter, of course the shorts will say, well, they wouldn't have a profit without the artificial California ZEV credit, and that might be true, but you know, it's part of the equation.
Yeah, for sure. Then we had some little bits and pieces of information about the Model 3 production that came out. It's how to approach this. It was released by Business Insider and what's her name, Linette Lopez. We've talked about her in the past, that she been highly critical of Tesla, and basically all the articles that come out about her are negative about Tesla. And Elon Musk even accused her of potentially being financed by the shorts, and especially Jim Chanos, because she's very close to Jim Chanos, or maybe not very close, but she been publicly very supportive of Jim Chanos, who is of course a big Tesla short. And what she reported this week is that when Tesla achieved that 5,000 units per week goal at the end of June, at the end of Q2, so that was a big moment for Tesla's Model 3 production. That was a big milestone for them. She reported this week that they achieved that through reworking most of the car, 4,300 out of the 5,000 cars needed rework. And normally, the amount of car that need rework, it's referred to as the first pass seal. So the car passed the first quality expansion the first time, you don't need any rework on it. And in the industry, normally people aim for about 80%. And over that week, Tesla was at 14% based on those information. Tesla didn't deny the information. They just they sent out a big statement about it. So that was good about our report, because it forced Tesla, a comment out of Tesla, which we learned more information from, including the fact that the rework went down. Not the rework. They didn't want to release any information on the rework. They used instead the labor hours, which is of course related because the automation is on the production process, not really on the rework. If you need rework, you need more labor hours. So if your labor hours decrease, then your rework most likely decreased too. And they said that it decreased by 30% over the last quarter. So a few things to keep in mind. Lynette Lopez's report looks like it was accurate, so good on her for that. It doesn't look like it was bad information. Of course, it was presented in a way that makes Tesla looks very bad, and that was my issue with it, because I don't think Tesla looks that bad from those numbers, really. It looks, if you just release those numbers like that, it looks bad. But
yeah, I mean, 37 minutes. The report said that the average rework took 37 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Is that at first I was like, that's almost no time, but when you multiply that out over lots of cars, that's quite a bit of time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know that much about manufacturing. So,
I think the most important thing to keep in mind here is that was for the week, the first time that they hit 5,000 a week. So they never hit that before. It was a big week. It was all hand on deck. It was full production. Like, everybody were killing themselves doing it. And Tesla, they said they maintained it after that and everything. But those big bursts of production, they're very important to show the weakness in the production process. So clearly showed a lot of weaknesses there, because there was a 30% improvement in number hour over just a month and a half, basically. So that's a big improvement to make over a month and a half. So it shows that Tesla had an issue and made an improvement fairly quickly on the production process. And of course, now you want to say, okay, how the rework affect the car? There's that I understand that fear from the owners. If you got a car in that production week and you say, oh, my car needed rework, like you said, it needed 37 minutes of rework. So it's not like the powertrain didn't work and they had to replace the entire thing and whatnot. So it looks like it was fairly minor stuff. And Tesla says that in the comment too, that most of the rework is very minor stuff. So I wouldn't worry too much about it. I worry more about it, not from if someone needs to worry about it. I think it's not very from an owner's perspective, more from an investor's perspective. It's more concerning. But like I said, at the same time, you need to take into account that Tesla improved by 30%, and that big burst of production was helpful to show those weaknesses, and Tesla was able to fix them fairly quickly, or at least fix them partly. And don't know how that 30% decrease in labor hours translates into an improvement in their first pass yield, but have to assume that it should be same thing, an improvement.
Yeah, and I'm sure Tesla will talk about it on the next earnings call.
That sounds like something that they would follow up on after that, for sure. Now moving on to Gigafactory 1, and also has some relation to labor hours. There was the audit report from Grant Thornton, from the audit firm Grant Thornton. That's in relation to Tesla's deal with the state of Nevada regarding bringing the Gigafactory 1 to the state, where they had a bunch of incentives, but the incentives independent of an investment schedule and hiring requirements, if you will. So every quarter, Tesla hired Grant Thornton to do an audit of their hiring process, their hiring status, and investment into the Gigafactory, not just for Tesla, but also partners in the Gigafactory. So that include Panasonic and a few other companies. And unfortunately, the report are always like 6 months late. So what we get right now are for numbers up to December 2017. So over 6 months, so two quarters behind, basically. And what we learned is that at that time, Gigafactory had 3,000 workers, over 3,000 workers working at the plant. The majority of them were working directly for Tesla, 1,955. Panasonic had a big increase, actually a bigger increase over the last period than Tesla. They now have 1,200 employees there. And there's also about 100 employees for HNT, which is the company that makes the battery cell cans for Panasonic cells. They also had about 100 employees there. According to the audit, total investment in Gigafactory 1 reached over $3.7 billion, which is a lot of money. Tesla planned to spend about $4 to $5 billion on it, and now they are at production that is apparently exceeding 20 gigawatt hour, and they have to spend over $4 billion at this point, because 3.7 was December, and the last report Tesla said that they spent about $400 million just over the last 6 months. So tons of money going to the Gigafactory. And also a big part of why Tesla was losing a lot of money over the last year, because a big capital investment into the capacity of Gigafactory 1. That's important because securing battery supply is, in my opinion, the biggest bottleneck in electric vehicle adoption overall. Because as automaker release more compelling electric vehicles, Diamond won't be the bottleneck. It just won't. It's not for Tesla. It's not for the Kona Electric that was just released. Apparently, they have a ton of reservation. The I-Pace, Jaguar I-Pace, ton of reservation. There's the Diamond is not a bottleneck right now. It might be in the near future after those big early adopters and the limitation of the production. Once the production capacity increases, it might become one. But right now, I think battery supplies is more worrying. So Tesla is doing the right thing at Gigafactory. A few other things about Gigafactory too. The solar array that they started back in February, they started building the huge solar array on the top of the rooftop of the Gigafactory. They stopped building it out 2 months in, and for the last few months there's been no activity at all. And now this week we learned that they started building it out again, so we've seen a few more rows of panels going up. So that, what's exciting about that is that they aim for the solar array to be the biggest rooftop solar array in the world, with a capacity of 70 megawatts, which is very, very huge. It's almost like a solar farm type of installation, but it's a rooftop installation. So exciting stuff there.
Yeah, and Reno is a good place for that because it doesn't get a lot of cloud cover. So no. they'll get a good return on that investment.
Yeah, and they eventually plan for the whole Gigafactory to be fully powered by renewable energy. Exciting stuff. Speaking of Tesla and solar energy, solar roof tiles installations. So we've talked a bit about it. It's clearly the rollout is very slow right now. Very slow rollout. During the earnings call, Elon Musk said that they now have several hundred homes with it. But then Tesla clarified that includes both homes with installation and both with the installation process starting, which could include just the survey, the site survey and everything, so they could be still months behind those installations. So very slow, but the good news this week is that we learned that they are expanding on the Northeast right now. So we have only heard of installation in California before. Now we received a bunch of reports from reservation holders in the Northeast, specifically New York, where they have been contacted by Tesla to arrange a site survey to start the process to get the quote and get an installation.
Yeah, it's interesting. One of my neighbors has Tesla coming out September 21st to do a site survey for his roof, and he's going to get the solar tiles as well.
Cool. Yeah, a lot of demand for that too. That's also another product that is a production constraint for sure. Excuse me. Moving on to Jaguar and the E-Type electric vehicle. That was a cool project that they released. When was it? Was it a few months back? It was last year. They released this concept vehicle, basically, that was EV conversion of a Jaguar I-Type, E-Type, which is, of course, the infamous classic Jaguar Roadster that was in production back in the 60s and the 70s.
Is that the one the two royals that got married rode away in?
Yeah, the prototype was actually the one that they used for that, apparently.
So I have some interesting, semi-interesting information on that one, and I imagine it's this one too. Apparently, the powertrain, like the electric batteries and engine and motor, were all built by Rimac. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's interesting. But so do you know if... So the prototype was built by Rimac, but do you know if they are involved in... Because, let's tell people the news first if you haven't read the news. So the news is that when that came out, that was just a prototype. It looked like any other show car that an automaker would bring. That's something they would bring to production. But yesterday they announced that they will actually bring a series production of that vehicle through their subsidiary of Jaguar Classic, which... rebuilt classic Jaguar vehicles, and they will sell it as an all-electric vehicle, and they will also offer EV conversion to existing owners of the vehicle of the E-Type. So they actually bring volume production to it. And what they said, why I'm asking you that, is because they said in the release that they were using I-PACE technology.
Yeah, I mean, so that's a good question. Does that mean that Rimac is involved with I-PACE? Could be. I mean,
yeah. I see it more a question of were they just involved for, like, they made the prototype for them, the E-Type Zero concept vehicle, they called it. And then Jaguar was like, hey, that makes sense. They got a lot of feedback from it and said it looks cool and everything. So we can make our home now with the I-PACE. And Rimac was just involved in making the concept, or now maybe Rimac is involved in making the whole production series. Of course, it's going to be low volume production, so maybe it's right in Rimac's wheelhouse. I don't know.
Oh, it's a good looking car.
Yeah, for sure. It's been praised for a long time for its design. I mean, it was featured in the James Bond movie. I remember at least one, but maybe even several James Bond movies, especially in those times. But I like the project on its own, but I also like a lot the idea of, like, classic car makers bringing back their classic vehicles with EV conversions. I mean, I think that should be a project for other automakers. I mean, GM with the... You want to see a whole 60s Corvette being EV conversion? People are doing it already on their own. I mean, and they're doing a great job at it. I mean, it's incredible. But to be something offered directly by the automaker as a retrofit, I think it's a brilliant idea, really.
Yeah, I mean, we had a guy, Brandon Hollinger, who wrote a couple posts for Electrek, who does that. He had a Saab that he did, which is I rode around it, and it was pretty cool. But he does that for a bunch of like clients. I think his site is amptorevolt.com, or just Google amptorevolt. And if you want to convert your old car, I think Mazda should bring. I mean, Mazda's not doing anything, but like the Mazda Miata would be the perfect form factor for an EV. And you know, obviously, it's close to this, but you know, it's a really small car. It's a little bit like the Roadster. It's, you know, it's like a weekend going around town kind of two people situation. You could probably put a 20 kilowatt hour battery pack in there. You know, 15 Suron batteries, basically.
Well, it's about the same size as the E-Type, and the E-Type are fitting a 40 kilowatt hour.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Leaf. Yeah. Although it's supposed to be faster than the original E-Type, which I don't know back then what was fast. But, yeah. You know, the Miata thing, I mean, Miata, you can get a Miata shell right now for probably next to nothing. If a company were to say, hey, bring your Miata tires and, you know, you're basically a bad Miata and we'll convert it for, you know, $10,000, I think that would be a pretty good, you know, business model.
You know, maybe 15,000.
Well, it depends on, I mean, it's the battery pack, right? That's most of the, well, I don't know. There's probably a lot of labor involved as well. But
yeah, probably like just in components, probably 10K. Then you're looking at the labor. So yeah, and why I'm thinking that, like, not just the not just like someone, an individual doing it at, in their garage and everything. I love the idea of that too, but I think there's a bunch of things that are more capital intensive. Like you want to also have a decent UI, so a classic car, all the inputs won't really work with an electric car input, so you want to have a UI that will manage your battery pack and you know your charging and everything. So there's a bunch of things that are more capital extensive, I think. But I mean, there's a big underserved market, I think, for EV conversion. So
yeah, I agree, and we really like what they're doing out with those Volkswagen minibuses, the Bullies or whatever they're called.
Yeah, I think those guys are based in Los Angeles, right?
Yeah.
I should check them out this winter when I'm going to be in Los Angeles. But actually, I should say that on the podcast too. I'm going to be moving to Los Angeles for a few months this winter, actually the whole winter, basically from January to April. And if you guys have some cool things EV-related to show me in L.A., it's going to be a lot easier for me to come check it out. So if you have, like we said, the guys that are doing the VW conversion, that would be cool to check out. I want to check out also the there's a bunch of Tesla tuners based in Los Angeles. We never checked them out in person, so I should really check out what they're doing there. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, Saunders is out there.
Saunders is in L.A.
I don't know.
Faraday Future is in L.A. Maybe I should try to hook up with a Faraday Future and see what they're doing. So a bunch of things.
Better hurry.
I'm putting it out there, so reach out if you have ideas about it. Moving on to Hyundai Kona Electric. We just talked about it, that it's being a very popular vehicle. And it is popular with electric readers. Seems to like it a lot, too, so... That's cool. And what's new this week is we got the official EPA rating for it. And Hyundai is still very good at being hyper-efficient. They delivered equivalent miles per gallon, which is, of course, not a great way to look at it, but it's the standard right now, so we're using it, of 120 miles per gallon equivalent.
Yeah, and if you look at the bottom on the EPA thing, it actually says 28 kilowatt hours for 100 miles, which I think...
That's better too, right?
Yeah, in the future, that's how we're going to talk about it. But it's impressive because for a couple of reasons. One, because this is not a super Prius-y car like their Ioniq, and my understanding is that it has a very similar powertrain with LG's help that the Chevy Bolt has, and they were still able to get. I guess it's only one.
It's about the same.
It's about the same as the Chevy.
And the footprint is also the same. So it's not like it's that better than the Bolt, but it's a little bit better. And it's
a little bit longer.
It's a little bit longer. It's better looking than the Bolt, right? I mean, I think in general, most people would agree.
I actually like the Bolt, but yeah. Most people, I know that I'm in the minority.
Yeah. I don't think that the Bolt is ugly, but I mean, I certainly prefer the shape of the Kona over the Bolt.
Yeah, it's more traditional, I guess.
And of course, having that balance between aerodynamic and beautiful shape is difficult for some automakers. But Hyundai did it here, and we were just talking about efficiency, but of course, how did that translate to range? 258 miles of range on a single charge, according to the EPA cycle, which is pretty dang good.
Yeah.
Pretty dang good.
I mean, so compare that to the Bolt, which has 238 and a 60 kilowatt hour battery. So they added 5 kilowatt hour of battery, and they got 20 miles out of it. So sounds about right.
Yeah, definitely. We don't have all the official pricing in the U.S. yet for the Kona Electric, which is weird because it's supposed to arrive very soon. But we're going to probably come back on that in the coming months or even weeks.
Really. Probably around 40,000 though, right?
Yeah, if we compare it to the price in the European markets and we remove the taxes and local incentive, it looks like it's going to start probably in the low 30s for the base version, which has a 39 kilowatt hour battery pack, I think.
Are they going to sell that in the U.S.?
I assume they would.
Yeah, probably.
But so right now, it's not in production. So even where they are actually delivering the Kona Electric, so in Norway and in South Korea, it's only the, I guess they call it the long-range battery pack, just like the Model 3, you see. A lot like the Model 3 too, which just doesn't, its standard battery pack is still not for sale either.
Right.
But yeah, moving on to a few new cool electric vehicle prototype that were unveiled this week. So we
some cool, some less cool.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
We're gonna agree to disagree on Nissan's or on Infiniti's, because I think that was garbage.
Okay. Okay. So I was looking at the Audi, so I was thinking.
No, the Audi is beautiful.
Yeah, Audi's pretty cool.
I mean,
yeah, the Infiniti's is less cool. But starting with the Audi, the PB18 e-tron concept cars. That's what it's called, and it's sort of fitting all the next gen electric vehicle technology inside one supercar, if you will. So they're talking about a solid state batteries, a three triple electric motor powertrain system, and the new 800 volt battery system and charging system, like be able to charge a battery at 800 volt, which is basically borrowed from Porsche, because Audi and Porsche are of course like sister companies to Volkswagen Group, and they fit all that into a very cool design of a supercar. And the coolest part of, I mean, the design itself of the exterior, it's pretty cool, but what they did with the interior, I think it's particularly interesting, where they fit it so that it's a normal two-seater configuration, but you can also change it when you get to the racetrack to have a monopole situation where your seat is in the center, like a race car. And it's apparently just a simple shift to do it.
That's kind of cool. It's a little bit like a McLaren with the middle thing.
Exactly.
My big problem with this design is all the, you know, the air intake, which, you know, obviously you don't need as much air, although maybe with this solid state batteries there's some other requirement, but it just seems like there's so many air intakes. It reminds me of the original Faraday Future prototype, where, you know, you had all these big air ducts, and like you don't need that for an electric car. It's actually detrimental.
Yeah, I think it's not like it's more for the aerodynamics system to create some downforce. I think it's, since it's a race car.
Yeah,
I think it's more about that than like a cooling system or anything. Though it could also be for cooling, but that's what I think. Could be wrong though.
Yeah.
Some spec, they didn't release a lot of the specs, but they said the 0 to 60 miles per hour is going to be about 2 seconds, which is very good. It's almost competitive with the next gen Roadster, really.
Yep.
But that doesn't mean anything, because that probably won't happen, because it's very much a show car. They unveiled it at the Pebble Beach, the Monterey Car Week.
We should go to that one of these.
Yeah,
times.
We should have gone, because a bunch of cars were unveiled there, so we missed it. The other car that was unveiled there was the Infiniti that Seth just mentioned. It's a speedster all-electric vehicle. Yeah, it does look weird. I'm looking at it right now.
It looks, and I don't even get it. Like, it's hard to even, like, that passenger area. Like, what? Why are you, like, is that where you just put your bags, or?
No, that's another hair intake, really. If you look at it from a front angle, you see the hair intake there.
Okay, yeah, because, again, electric vehicles need all that air.
Yeah. I mean, Infiniti doesn't have an electric car in production yet.
No, and this to me, just like I said on Twitter, this to me just screams like we are not building an electric car. Like this is how little we care. We're going to just, you know, make a high school design experiment out of it.
That was actually designed by their guys at the their design center in California. Is it in Malibu, I think? Or, oh no, that was the Audi. That was
I get it as a concept. It's like interesting for sure, but like it's not even believable, you know what I mean? Like it's not even like, oh, this could be a car. No, this would never, nobody would ever make this car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess. I mean, Infiniti says that they are releasing their first all-electric car soon. By soon, I think it's like 2021. So not that soon, necessarily. But they also say that they plan for half of their... That's the thing with Infiniti and Nissan. Infiniti is part of Nissan, of course. It's another luxury brand. They talk about electrified vehicles instead of electric vehicles. And that they include their purely electric vehicles like the Leaf, but they also include their what they call e-power vehicle, which I think is the stupidest thing that they came up recently with. It's basically an hybrid without plug. So it's a basic hybrid. It's just that all the propulsion is coming from the battery, but the only way to charge a battery is through a generator.
Which is crazy, because like, why wouldn't you just put a few batteries in there? And it seems like almost the worst of both worlds to me.
It's more efficient than a purely gas-powered cars for sure. But yeah, why not just add a plug? That's the thing. So add a plug, even if the battery is not that big, give the option. So that's what's great about electric cars, people. It's going to sound like Captain Obvious here, but you get, unlike a gas-powered cars or the diesel-powered cars, when you buy that car, you have only one option to power that car. If it's a gas-powered car, gasoline, you buy gasoline. If it's a diesel car, you need to buy diesel. Yeah, just one fuel option for those car. If you have an electric car, you have a bunch of different options because your power source is the option. So if depending on where you base, of course you're gonna be more dependent on the grid. But if you can get solar panels, you can get also wind energy. You have more options. Even if it's still like. It's maybe instead of being a monopoly, it's a what do you call it, an oligopoly, the one with a few monopoles, a monopoly. So it's
I forget.
I think it's oligopoly. You don't have that many options, so it's not like a completely free market, but you have more option to it. And the only thing that enables that is having a plug to charge your battery inside the car. And they already have a battery in those e-power cars. They just don't give you the option to charge it with whatever energy source you want, which is stupid. It's just stupid.
Yep. No argument.
So my point was that Infiniti is saying that they're going to sell half of their sales are going to be electrified vehicles by 2025, which is a big change because there's basically none right now. So over the next 6-7 years or so, they won't have their sales to be that. But we don't know what's the mix of electrified vehicle going to be between battery powers, pure electric vehicles, and those heat powers things. I hope BEVs are an important part of it, but I'm not so sure. Another concept vehicle that was unveiled this week was the Kalashnikov, which you might know better as the maker of the AK-47 assault rifle.
Yeah, but it's and also they make some electric bikes.
Now, yeah, they're getting into the EV space in a bigger way, and this week they unveil an electric car, retro-looking electric car, based on the Kombi, the famous Soviet era Russian vehicle. They retrofitted it with a battery pack and an electric motor. They unveiled that and saying, we're the Russian Tesla now. That's basically this. It was a weird release because so they didn't release that much information about the car. They said that it's going to have just over 200 miles of range and 220 kilowatt electric motor. And also they released like a few images, but it's a very boring looking car.
I mean, the design of this car, again, you have the big, huge front, like square,
the grill, yeah.
Yeah, then it's not wind efficient at all. It's actually like, I don't think a car has been built in the US anyway, like this for, I don't know, I would say since the 80s. Like, it looks like a old car, which is kind of cool. I actually kind of like the look of it, but it's not going to be a great car.
It's going to suck for sure. Just look at the wheel wells and it's ridiculous. But they made it sound like they are using that car that they unveiled, which they call the CV1, and they call it a supercar, which is crazy. But sounds like they're using it as a sort of a test bed to develop an electric powertrain.
Yeah.
And why they made all those news this week, aside from the fact that they are Kalashnikov, is that they said that they are competing with Tesla with that car. They said it's a great car, we're going to compete with Tesla, or we're going to at least keep up with them. That's what they said. So, of course, that made all the news because Tesla is in the title.
Yep.
Quickly, we have just two other pieces of news that I think it's worth mentioning, because we just mentioned that they made the news with Tesla, and now another company is making the news by claiming that they are the Teslas of the seas. But I think it's more warranted a little bit because it's a cool product. I guess they call it a yacht, but what's the standard for being a yacht? It's just being a boat with an inside cabin. Is that it?
I don't even know, because does this even have an inside cabin?
It does. Okay. No, it does have a pretty significant inside cabin with a bathroom and everything. Okay. It's not that big of a boat. It's a 10-meter boat. I guess it's pretty big, a 10-meter boat.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Is it the shape of the hull? Is it having a cabin inside? I don't know what makes a yacht, but they're claiming that it's a yacht.
It implies a nice boat, I guess.
Yeah, probably. They're called Q yachts. And this particular motor is the Q30. And they call it a day cruiser yacht because, yes, it does have some limitation. It's not like a yacht that you're going to sail through the Mediterranean sea with it, but more of like a riverboat, something to just cruise on the bay with it. You don't take like large voyage with it. The specs are, you have the option of between a 30 kilowatt hour battery pack or a 60 kilowatt hour battery pack, and that enables different speeds and different range, of course. So the standard 30 kilowatt hour pack gives you 42 nautical miles if you just go cruising speed, which cruising speed is I had that somewhere, cruising 9 knots, so that's about 10 miles per hour.
Yep.
Then you have a 60 kilowatt hour battery pack. The 30 kilowatt hour battery pack, 42 nautical miles at cruising speed. If you go at max speed, which is 15 knots, you're gonna get only 22 miles out of it, nautical miles. The 60 increase that to 80 miles nautical miles at cruising speed, and 40 if you go in max speed, which is about like 17, 18 miles per hour.
So my question is, why don't they just put solar panels on the front? I know it wouldn't totally solve, like, it's not gonna, you can't run on solar panels, but like a boat spends a lot of time just sitting on the, you know, dock or whatever. Like, why not just put some solar panels up there to charge the boat while you're not doing anything? There's a bunch of white space.
Yeah, there's a bunch of white space. You're right, not that much though, because you see, like, the deck takes a big part of the whole boat. But maybe something like a roof that you can put on,
yeah, like remove, a canopy.
Or partly remove, like a canopy that you can roll maybe, and with solar cells on it, that would be cool. And yeah, it wouldn't extend your range that much, but on a good day it could add like a few percent.
Yeah, why not?
And also, if you can just leave it there and charge your battery pack, because that's one thing with electric boats, is that you're sometimes limited in your charging option depending on where you park the boat. So having the ability to charge it with your battery pack and not the battery pack but a solar canopy would be cool.
The other thing is, did I see a price?
Yeah, they didn't release that price. I think it's going to be pretty expensive.
If you have to ask, don't.
Yeah. Just that type of boat with a cabin inside and everything.
Right.
It's always crazy expensive on its own. It's not like a speedboat. Those are pretty expensive too. But
yeah.
Just before we go, maybe like a quick public service announcement type of thing with the Ford had a pretty big recall this week for their charging cables. So if you bought a Ford electric vehicle, whether it be the Ford Focus Electric, the Fusion Energy, or the C-Max Energy, which is the first one is the all-electric, Focus is all-electric, and the two other one are their plug-in hybrids options. Between 2012 and 2015, all the charging cable that came with those cars are being recalled because of a risk of fire. So apparently they cannot detect like when they're overeating, and they could overeat too much and potentially cause a fire. They're recalling all of them and replacing them with new ones, so not that big of a deal. But they are telling people to stop using them right now and to contact your dealership, though they should be notified first. So it came out 2 days ago, but so maybe you already got notified. But if not, check it out, because it's you're gonna get a new cable with less risk of a fire, apparently. And that's pretty much it, everyone, for this week's episode. Thanks a lot for listening. Thanks a lot for watching on YouTube. Please subscribe if you like to do so, both on YouTube or your podcast app. Also, thanks a lot to our Patreon supporter at patreon.com/electrek. That's helped us out a lot. And now soon we started reaching out, I think, for people, right?
Yep. For, we need to get sizes.
Yeah, we started reaching out for people for sizes and address to ship your merch. And we're going to get new ones soon. Maybe if you have suggestions, maybe like a baseball cap or something. I don't know. We're going to work on that and get back to you fairly soon. Thanks a lot for listening, everyone. Bye-bye.